Yeah, it's time to parlay, time to win a little money. Deegan and Juice with Kylan and Stucky. I know you got a chalk, but it's time for the teaser. This is how we do it when it's football season. Ayy, Kylan and Stucky, yeah. Ayy, Kylan and Stucky, whoop.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Welcome to Degen and Juice, episode 22. This is Bowl Preview Part 1. I'm Stucky, and with me, as always, is Colin Wilson, preparing for a non-Arkansas Bowl appearance. What's going on, Colin?
We're cramming in as much information as possible, but tonight I'm distracted by the fact that Aaron Rodgers just made an announcement he's coming back. Roy Moore has infuriated Horse Twitter, which I didn't even know existed, and the Yankees have signed everybody in the world, and now they're going to go out and get Machado to play shortstop, even though they got Gleyber Torres. You know, I the world's crazy. It's upside down.
Yeah, one of the reasons I just tweeted about this, that the Roy Moore loss, like, he won by, what, a thousand, and I just saw Roy Moore say it's not over and they're going to contest it.
Right, but of course.
He won by, like, I mean, Doug Jones won by, what, 1%? And they said it was the first time. So basically took a child molester to win, well, I shouldn't say, an alleged, you know.
Now, let's be, hold on, alleged, like, now, hold on. In the South, it's different. I mean, we're talking about a guy that is with dated a 14-year-old. Is that what we're going to say? Are we going to make it this PG-13 rated here?
Yeah, but that's what it took for a Democrat to win by 1%. So what I'm wondering about is, they said it was the first time in 25 years. Like, obviously, Alabama is becoming more progressive than it was. Who was the Republican who lost 25 years ago? Like, a serial killer? That's, I got to look that up, because they said a Democrat won 25 years ago. If this is what it took to win by literally, like, 1,000 votes, what happened 25 years ago? But I was just hoping. One of the main reasons I wanted Roy Moore to lose is because I was hoping that Doug Jones would say, fuck you and the horse you rode in on. But anyway.
I didn't even know Horse Twitter existed, and all of a sudden.
Yeah, so what is this Horse Twitter upset about?
Okay, so Roy Moore was like, there's this
horse lovers? Like, horse lovers?
No, there's this gif of, there's this video of him riding a horse around, like, this stable, like, he's trying to show his masculinity, and he's trying to, like, prove that, you know, that he's just filling the Republican role and trying to get more. I don't know what it kind of promo it was, but all of a sudden Horse Twitter went absolutely crazy about his form, about his feet, about his back, the way he was, about how the horse was going to buck him. Like, Deadspin just, you know, shout out to them, I guess, but they just put out a whole story on how, like, Horse Twitter's gone crazy about Roy Moore's form on top of a horse. And I had no clue Horse Twitter existed. What do these people talk about?
Interesting. So, yeah, I mean, I guess horses, right? But it's not, because I know there's gambling horse Twitter, which is like which is like a pocket of gambling Twitter.
Right.
There should be like someone should do a documentary on gambling Twitter. But yeah, I guess there's odd pockets. I remember some guy, part of like anime Twitter, threatened my girl and said she's going to like come and rape her. And then all these people were like tweeting at her. And I was like, it's fascinating when you like stumble into one of those, like, you know, just random niches of Twitter that we never get into because we just, you know, follow sports and gambling accounts.
A year and a half ago, I got attacked, and I never knew this existed either. I made a joke. I did a pod about a year and a half ago, and I made a joke that UMass should essentially just quit football, that they're leaving the MAC, and they might as well not even have a program, and they should just go back down and play FCS-level competition and be there, kind of like what Idaho's doing. That got retweeted, like, 25 to 30 times by UMass alumni and a couple of the players, and I was being screamed at, like, in all caps by women, like, in their 40s, like, UMass is, you know, we're never leaving FBS, we're a legitimate program, you shouldn't make, I was like, how did I get into this wormhole? Like, how I mean, these pockets of Twitter I've never even knew existed.
That's insane. Yeah, that actually brings up an interesting question. Like, what, if you were, you know, say, I don't know, I mean, back in the day it was, you know, there's a couple powerhouse programs that have moved up, you know, Georgia Southern. Would you rather be a dominant FCS team and compete for national championship? I mean, a perfect example is North Dakota State. All right.
Yep.
So they have a stadium. They're large enough, I think, where they could, you know, compete and get to D1, but then they wouldn't win national championships. But you're you know, you're still a level below. What would you prefer? I can see both sides of the argument, but
yeah, it's like, you know, Youngstown State. I mean, they get some players. They get some fantastic players, and they're in this really great geographical area in between the Akron and Columbus, and like this coaching, some of the Pelinis of the world and everybody that's come out of there. You know, James Madison is another one of them. You know, I mean, they beat FBS teams every year. So I don't know which one you'd rather be, but
yeah, it probably comes down to an economic decision, which I'm sure they weigh. You know, it's okay, we're going to fill the stadium with this dominant team. We can get some kids who want to come here and star on a team that's competing for national championships on a tier lower, but then you're not sharing in like the bowl revenue and, you know, a lot of the TV, you know, possible TV revenue. So I'm sure it's an economic analysis.
And the actual live version of this, I mean, and you and I, after the bowl season gets over, we get to start talking about Liberty, right? So Liberty is one of those teams that's moving up to FBS next year, similar to what Coastal did 2 years ago. Coastal just dominated FCS. I don't think they lost a game they maybe lost one game and they were just beating everybody like crazy and they moved up and now, you know, Coastal's, you know, struggling to get on their feet and everything. But Liberty's going to be that same team next year.
What about Justice for All? Were you going to talk about that? Sorry, bad dad joke. All right, so before we get in, we're actually just to give you guys a quick rundown of how this is going to work, the bowl previews. We'll touch on a little NFL first, and then we'll go over confidence pool strategies. And, you know, if you haven't checked it out on the Sports Action app, we actually put out a confidence pool ranking article. I think you have to, like, other sites are putting it out, you have to pay for it, which is ridiculous.
I haven't seen one that's free. Let me just put that out there. Like, I'm not going to name them off, but I haven't seen anybody that's free so far. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, so we'll get into that, and it's pretty cool. We actually go down and rank them 1 to 39 or whatever it is, and then, you know, we give a little blurb as to why we like one side or not, and then we're going to go through 7 bowls today. So we'll go through the 5 bowls that are on Saturday to kick everything off, and then I don't believe there's any bowls on a Monday this year, which I'm kind of mad about, because I remember that, what was that bowl with the BYU brawl? That was on a Monday. I remember Monday afternoon.
That was a Monday.
There always should be a Monday afternoon bowl, a brawl, or a brawl and a bowl.
Well, hey, we got Oregon and Boise State's playing, and that's the LeGarrette Blount Bowl, right? I mean, that's in Vegas, so.
That's true. Yeah, we could get some crazies there, but we'll go over the 5 bowls that are on Saturday, and then we'll cover the bowls that are on Tuesday and Wednesday. So we'll run down each of those bowls from a betting perspective, what we like and why. And then next week, you know, we'll release the podcast again, probably Wednesday or Thursday. And then we'll cover off, you know, the bowls from, you know, the 21st of December through probably the 26th. And then have one last bowl bowl preview podcast that's towards the end of the year that'll cover off the rest. So this will be a 3-part series. We'll do one a week. And let's dive in here. Before we get to the confidence pool, I thought that in regards to the super contest, I can't believe the Browns again did that to me. It was my only loss this weekend. I don't want to talk about it, but the Ravens, your boy, Alex Collins, looks so good for us. Lost in a devastating way to the Steelers, who I think are in major trouble this week against the Patriots. Mm-hmm. The Ravens, funny enough, I'm actually going out to Cleveland this weekend, if anyone's out there, for the Ravens game. I'm actually afraid of the spot and want to bet the Browns, which is probably good as a Ravens fan, because they'll probably win. The Ravens will win. The Ravens always beat the Browns, but it's a terrible spot. It's actually the one game they can afford to lose. Like, if they lose this game and then win against the Colts and Bengals at home to close the year, they're pretty much in, because the Browns, the way the tiebreakers work, it's probably going to come down to common opponents. If the Bills beat the Dolphins twice, because I'm assuming they lose in Foxborough. I don't even know if the Bills are going to beat the Dolphins twice, but if they do, you know, loss won't hurt the common opponents, and the Ravens have a leg up, whatever. It's actually the one game they can afford to lose, but your boy Alex Collins is running, unbelievably for us, and he went from being cut on the Seahawks to our dominant back. Do you have any thoughts on Mr. Collins?
Yeah, I love Buddha. Everybody around Arkansas, we called him Buddha, and I think his Twitter handle is Buddha03. And, you know, the we knew he was great at Arkansas even the day that we signed him. A lot of people don't know this, but you know, the recruiting period got moved up. It's actually on December 20th, so I think it's in 8 days. But the Alice Collins is one of the greatest stories ever. As far as crazy recruiting stories, in case you didn't know, he was from South Florida, and Bielema was recruiting him heavily. And apparently his mother had other plans. His mother had plans for him to attend. It's either Florida or Florida State. I can't remember. But she stole his letter of intent. He signed his letter of intent with Arkansas, agreed with his dad, like, you know, Arkansas is the best place for me. His mother stole the letter of intent and was driving up I-95, like, up to the coaching staff, I think, at Florida, and, like, trying to hand it off to them. It's the craziest recruiting story ever. But I love Alex Collins. I love Buddha. He's just a machine. I always knew he had it in him. It's too bad that it didn't work out in Seattle. But it's good for your boys, which, you know, they're minus 10 against the Colts coming up next week. So, yeah, this is a spot. But, you know, if you bet the Browns, obviously the Ravens are going to win, because it's just been a bad – betting the Browns every week has just been bad.
The Browns covered the one game I didn't bet them against the Chargers.
How did they blow a 14-point lead
in the fourth quarter? And then they start with the ball in overtime, find a way to turn it over, and then third and sixth wide receiver screen. All you got to do is make the tackle. Even if they get a first down, they probably then set up for a field goal. Of course, they find a way to lose by six. And I got a good number of 3.5.
You know, what's interesting is last year, the biggest problem with the Browns is they weren't covering teasers either. Like, not only were they not covering the spread last year, they weren't covering teasers either. Like, they were losing pretty poorly. And now they're not covering games. I mean, they're losing them at the last minute. I think they're at least getting within teaser range. I'm not suggesting go out and play some teasers, but at least they're getting better in the fact that they're covering some teasers in these losses.
Yeah, the only thing they can do right is blow covers, and they can defend the run. They've led the NFL in yards per rush almost all season. So, you know, the Ravens are off that deflating loss against Pittsburgh. You know, it's their second consecutive road game. It's against Cleveland. It is a team they've owned, but it's a terrible spot because they're not going to be able to run the ball effectively. And I don't know. I mean, Josh Gordon could give them trouble, as Antonio Brown did, because the loss of Jimmy Smith. I mean, they don't give up 300-yard passer the first 12 games of the season with Jimmy Smith, and the first game with that, and that includes the game against the Steelers, and the first game without him, they gave up 500 yards.
We should play this game every week before we roll off the NFL. This is the start of our mini contest, by the way. We're like 8 games out of first. I think we're not going to clear any kind of cash, and we'd have to have a pretty strong 13-2 or 14-1 to make any money. So the mini contest, we turn our eyes to that. We should play this game every week. Who's going to win the NFC? Now that Foles is starting for the Eagles, let's see if we have a different answer every single week we record a podcast. Because I can't.
I mean, I've stuck with the fact that I think it's going to be Minnesota for the last couple weeks. And they have to get healthy on the offensive line. Last week was the first time that they had two offensive line starters out, and they had to shuffle everyone. They were moving left tackle to go left to right guard, their center to left and center. And then they all lost another starter during the game. Keenum got sacked 6 times. He was hurried 20 times. And, you know, he wasn't sacked more than twice all year before that game. So their offensive line has been a strong suit. So that's one of the main concerns with them. But they have – and they didn't run the ball. You know, they only handed the ball off, I think, like 15 times. They averaged the second most rush attempts in the NFL behind the Jags by like one attempt. And then last week they just didn't run the ball. So they need to be healthy. As long as they're healthy on the offensive line, they don't have any devastating injuries there with Reif and Remmers. But they have a well-balanced attack, a great tight end, two really solid receivers. You could argue that they're the best tandem in football, and then their defense is really elite. I mean, at all levels. You know, they have probably the best lockdown corner. They have a really good defensive front. So, you know, and the scary thing with them is they can potentially play a home game in the Super Bowl. But I think that they're built for a playoff run, regardless of where they play. The biggest question, besides the health of the offensive line, which I think should be fine, and there's, you know, that's just kind of out of your control, is what will happen if Keenum has another bad game. Do then, you know, he wasn't terrible last week, but he threw two picks, and, you know, do they start saying Teddy, and does Teddy come in, and that can throw the whole everything up in the air. But I don't necessarily think the Eagles are done either. I mean, they can get to the Super Bowl. I don't think they can beat, you know, Patriots with Nick Foles, but as long as they can maintain that one seed, you just need to win two games at home, with a good defense, good running game? I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, now, see, it's amazing to me is that the home field advantage, like nobody has the bad weather playing into their factor. Like the Rams play out in L.A., Minnesota's in a dome, New Orleans is in a dome. If Atlanta makes it, they're in a dome. You know, although I think Seattle's going to beat, you know, the Rams this weekend. So, I mean, I just kind of flip-flop all the time, and I don't – Minnesota's offensive line bothers me. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Bengals cover the double digits this weekend, you know, based solely on that offensive line issues for Minnesota. So, I kind of flip. I see Alvin Kamara, you know, run around for New Orleans, and I get excited about that. I really don't know who to take every week. But you know what? If I had to go this week, I'll still say the Eagles will make the Super Bowl, but I might change my mind next week.
Yeah, the Saints are dangerous as hell, that offense, when Kamara's healthy. Luckily got that Falcons cover, and it was mainly because Deion Jones had the pick and knocked out Kamara. The problem with the Rams is I love their offense. They don't have any rush defense, and now both their corners are hurt. One of them ruptured his Achilles. The other one was a concussion. So, I mean, I don't know if their defense can hold out. You still have Aaron Donald, but, I mean, that's they have a really depleted defense, and if you can't defend the run come playoff time, you're going to be really in trouble against a New Orleans, against a Philadelphia. And the thing with Seattle, I mean, not only do they have their two best players in the defensive backfield out, they now could potentially be without KJ Wright what's his name, the best linebacker in football. How come I can't think of his name right now? Who the hell's the linebacker on the Seahawks? He's probably going to win Defensive Player of the Year. You're not going to help me out? Bobby Wagner. And so they could be without both of them this week. I mean, that's, you know, so if they're without, they're probably their two best players in the front seven and their two best players in the secondary. It could be tough against the Rams. To highlight how, you know, Bobby Wagner, if you look at Pro Football Focus, he's the highest rated linebacker by far in the NFL this year. When he got hurt last week in Jacksonville, this is a staggering stat. The Jaguars scored touchdowns on three of the next four plays after Wagner went out. Uh-huh. Touchdowns on three of the next four plays. So yeah, there's a lot of teams have issues. I think that the Vikings and Saints are probably the two most complete rosters now that Wentz is hurt. But the Eagles have that, okay, we have home field, and they can still maintain that, and they're going to be right there. I dropped them a touch below, and the Panthers will have an argument with their defense, and I just don't trust their offense ultimately.
Yeah, we're gonna get Wagner listed with a hamstring, so who knows? You know, he probably can't have any kind of burst. Probably has no lateral movement, so who knows? Yeah, it could take 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I know in baseball, you're at least a 15-day DL. Of course, now they got the 10-day DL.
Yeah, and that's huge because the loser of that game is at risk of missing the playoffs because the Rams go to the Titans next week. I don't believe in the Titans, but it's a road game against a team over 500. And the Seahawks go to Dallas, who gets Ezekiel Elliott back. So you're talking about all of a sudden possibly falling out of playoff contention.
Are the Chiefs going to beat the Chargers? I know we've talked about this for weeks, but is this Chargers thing finally done?
They're going to run out of steam eventually. I think they're still one of the most complete teams in the AFC. With the one good thing that the Chiefs did last weekend is they got Kareem Hunt going again. It was the most rush yards they've had since week four. It was the first time a running back for the Chiefs got in the end zone since week three, which is shocking, but that's how you have to beat San Diego. You need to pound it, and you need to run it right down their throat, and you need to commit to it, and then you can, off the play action, which will, you know, kind of help you contain some of their elite pass rush, then you can, you know, would set up Kelce and set up some deep shots to Hill. Also look out for the Chiefs special teams because the Chargers have probably, I think it's, according to Football Outsiders, are the worst-ranked special teams unit in the NFL. So, and the Chiefs are a top 10 unit, so they have to take advantage of some special teams plays and really run it. The Chargers, it's going to be a really good game. I don't know if I'll necessarily have an investment, but it's a huge game in the AFC.
It gets the biggest TV in the house over the Middle Tennessee State-Arkansas State game on Saturday night.
Absolutely, yeah. And then the big game Sunday is Pittsburgh-New England. I think Belichick was playing 5D chess last night and lost the game on purpose. The game ultimately doesn't mean anything, and you know, and this is either back-to-back-to-back. This is their third consecutive road game. If they win, and it kind of got their attention, they won 8 straight. They're going to have a motivated team coming into Pittsburgh. I don't know how Pittsburgh's going to defend them. They said that they're not going to run zone. I mean, New England owns them. Brady owns them. They always run zone, and Brady picks it apart. They said all offseason, we're not going to play New England with a zone. breaking news. Yeah, yeah. It took you that long to figure it out. You can't play a zone against New England because Brady will just kill you underneath. But I don't know if they can play man. I mean, Artie Burns is better now. He can, but it doesn't matter. You know, you can take away the receivers, but how are their linebackers going to cover their backs and Gronk man to man without Shazier? Their linebackers looked horrendous. I mean, they had Sean Spence off the street last week for the Ravens game, and I don't know. I think New England. Tomlin's talking shit now. Belichick will coach circles around him. I can't see New England not winning that game.
I never saw Tom Brady be so inaccurate before. Even times when he didn't have pressure, against Miami, when the defensive line, when Sue wasn't getting to him, he still was missing wide receivers by like a large margin. And you have to wonder how much of that was.
Yeah, they look so out of whack. Color look great. I don't know. Because ultimately, they end the year at home against the Bills and the Jets. I mean, the one seed was going to come down the next week anyway. So, I don't know. We'll see. It's a dream spot for the Steelers. Situationally, they have AFC championship revenge. They are catching the Patriots on their third consecutive road game on a short week. But I just don't know if they can necessarily match up. And keep an eye on the special teams. The Patriots are going to kill them with those kicks that Tucker did. And, you know, the Patriots have the number one field position advantage in football. And they're going to kill them with that. And I don't know. I just see New England winning that game. But anyway, we digress. Well, let's move on to college. Before we get into those seven games, let's talk about the confidence pool for all of you out there who are going to fill one out. I still need to fill mine out. And like I said, you can go to the Sports Action app, see what we did for Collins one and some reasoning there. Do you want to just talk through your strategy and how you do it?
Yeah.
You have a couple games that you really don't like and a couple games you really like that are kind of risky or not.
Yeah, I mean, the column speaks for itself. You can go out there. And props to you for, helping me get the thing edited, because it was a monster piece to get out there. Trying to write 40 blurbs, 39 blurbs, that was an undertaking for a couple days. But, I definitely got an assist from the entire Sports Action team. It was great. But, when I look back and I read this about what we put together, some of these teams I still feel extremely strong about. Some of these teams I've kind of waned on a little bit. As far as the strategy goes every year with these bowl confidence pieces, point spreads really don't seem to matter in most of these contests. When dogs, there's not a lot of dogs covering and not winning. There's a lot of, bowl games, a lot of dogs end up just flat out winning the game. I mean, I can think of a whole bunch of them off my hand every year where it just comes down to a fact that there's a motivation factor, or there's a coaching factor, or there's just one area that another team just cannot expose and they just can't do any damage to them. I'm thinking specifically of Akron going up against Florida Atlantic this year. So what you want to look for in these confidence pools is you want to group them all together. And you say, okay, which one of these games am I going to take the dog? Let me look at the spread. Let me look at the dog. And generally, you want to hash these all out by which ones have, coaches hanging on. You've got your Arizona States that are keeping Todd Graham on, even though he's been fired. You've got your SMUs that have a coach that's moved on, and now they've hired in Sonny Dykes, and he's actually going to coach the game like 8 days, 8 days from now. So you got to pay attention. Then there's Florida State, who has a holdover, except it's a position coach that's been in line for like 30 years, and they really want to play hard for him. So you have to take all of that into consideration. And then I go out to social media and I start doing some mining to figure out, who's got the motivation, who's excited about the swag that they're getting. Are they excited? Is FAU excited that they're staying at home? Or did they really want to go out and travel? Or, Colorado State's fans can make the drive to Albuquerque. North Texas is doing everything to get their student body for $60 on a bus round trip to New Orleans. You got to take all that into account, and when you figure out what dogs you want to take, you start marking them off as low confidence and you just take them straight up. If it's a dog and you think they're going to win, you just mark it straight up in a confidence pool and you put it as a low level points. For example, I'm taking Appalachian State to win their game. I'm taking them in the confidence pool, but it's a low confidence number. So that's one area you want to look at. But if you see a favorite that you like on the other hand, and you're almost positive that not only they're going to win the game, they're going to cover the game, then you have no problem just firing at them as high as you can on the confidence level. Now, for me, that turned out to be Ohio State, because I really think that USC is going to have a hell of a time trying to keep up with Ohio State, especially what Ohio State could do on defense from a rushing perspective. Florida Atlantic is just going to run circles around Akron. I don't care if Florida Atlantic doesn't like the fact that they're playing their game. We'll get to this here in a little bit. The fact they're playing their game in their home stadium where they just hosted their conference championship, there's a little bit disgruntled that they're staying at home, but they could have their worst day of the year, and Akron could have their best day of the year, and this game shouldn't even be close. Another one, you know, some of these are, you know, Utah, you know, you look at what they've done in bowls. You know, they're 11-1 in their last 12 bowls. They're coming in focused. West Virginia won't have Will Grier. So, you know, you got to keep all those things in line. And when you find favorites that you like and you think they'll cover, they get the highest confidence. And your dogs that you think that, you know, are going to cover the game and potentially win the game, they get your lowest confidence. And then everything else kind of falls in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point with the dogs. And, you know, the number doesn't really matter. And I think that lends itself to a strategy that I like during bowl season is if any dog you like, just sprinkle a little bit also on the money line. My confidence pool strategy, I actually won a big one a couple years ago. And I'm in it every year on the last weekend because of my strategy. And this is what I do. I'll take the largest favorites that I'm really convinced that are going to win. And I'll put them in like the, you know, the low 30s, high 20s. And then where, you know, I'm not going to lose too much ground, but I'm not going to put them at the very top. Then if one gets upset, I'm not losing as much. But really what my strategy is, I put a lot of confidence in, because I'm not doing this to, you know, it's more of a fun thing. I put almost, you know, if there's 40, I would to go 36 to 40, I would put in the college football playoff games. Mm-hmm. So the reason I'm always in it is I have the, you know, so many points outstanding left, and that no one else, you know, most people don't have all of those games from 38 to 40. So, you know, then I can, it strings me along longer.
Right. Yeah. So, it's definitely a good strategy. I mean, there's some other things to follow out there. If you're not a big believer in conferences, like the MAC, I think is something crazy, like 5-18 in their last 23 bowls. So generally you don't want to back the MAC. Although Northern Illinois for me this year has played a lot of quality teams outside of the MAC, like the San Diego States of the world, that I felt comfortable enough taking them over Duke.
Fair enough. All right, well, let's get into these seven bowls. So the first bowl game is the R&L. I love all of these names. The R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl, which is obviously in New Orleans. You have North Texas versus Troy. Troy's laying 6.5 here, over under 62. Quick tidbit that I have. We've talked about Troy a lot. They're number one in the green zone, number one in the red zone.
The green zone.
You got me saying the green zone now. and number three in the green zone, and I don't know what in the other zones. But both the teams can score, but I just like Troy's defense better. Great tidbit. Troy is the only team in the country to not allow more than 24 points all season. No other team can say that. The thing with North Texas is that they've been a great offense all year, but they're playing without their star running back, Jeffrey Wilson. They have a freshman in his place. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I really like, from a confidence perspective, I like Troy. I like them in a money line play. I might lay the 6.5. Keep your eye out on Marcus Jones, who became the first player in NCAA history this year to return two kicks for a touchdown in the same game. And then in the Sun Belt Conference Championship, he had a 100-yard kick return and a 99-yard interception return. So he's a difference maker on defense and special teams. What do you see here?
Yeah, so for me, my line made this +2. It's made North Texas +2, and S&P Plus makes it North Texas +3.5. So if you're looking at this, Troy's got a little bit of overvalue here. If you're looking at the 6.5 and even the 7s that are at the bookmaker right now as we're looking at this, you know, the whole story, everything you're going to read is going to be about Troy's top 25 defense against North Texas's top 25 offense. And that is true. Troy is just amazing. They're number one in, you know, limiting finishing drives in the green zone there. And they're even better, you know, they're really good in the red zone also. So, you know, in my opinion, the number is way too high. So I start looking at the other side of the ball, because if Troy's going to knock out North Texas's very efficient offense, North Texas isn't explosive, but they are efficient. They should be able to move the chains. They're just going to have problems scoring points once they get closer to the goal line. So if you look at the other side of the ball, Troy's offense isn't particularly good at throwing the ball. They're 92nd in passing S&P, and they're 106 in explosiveness on offense when it comes to passing. So where the Trojans actually score points is on short gains, is on running the ball. They're 32nd in power success rate, and North Texas is 88th in defending that same category. So if you go down this line of thinking, I really like the under in this game, just because if Troy's going to put any points on, you know, they're really good at limiting, you know, finishing drives, and they're really good at limiting points in the red zone. And at the same time, the only way that they score points is if they can get short gains on the ground and move the ball and eat up the clock. So I love the under 63 in this game. I'm pretty sure that I'm gonna go with North Texas at this. You know, I got a publishing deadline, I think, of tomorrow, and I want to wait to see if we can get a 7 at most of the other books. But I think 7 and 6.5 is a little bit too high for a Sun Belt team, and especially I think North Texas can at least score enough. Maybe 24 points is enough, you know, that we're going to find out here. But, you know, another thing is special teams. Keep an eye on that. North Texas ranks 51st in special teams. That far outweighs Troy. They're 122nd in special teams. And, you know, from a motivational standpoint, the North Texas president, you know, came out and said, you know, all students can take a bus ride and have a hotel trip and a game ticket for $60. And they're even having a remote graduation in New Orleans for some of the seniors on the team, for some of the cheerleaders and the spirit squad and the band, all those that are graduating, that are seniors and graduating this winter period. They're having a remote graduation in New Orleans on Friday night. So, I mean, there's going to be a lot of, you know, a lot of motivation there for some of the players on the Mean Green. So we'll see how it goes. But I lean with North Texas and I lean with the under.
Yeah, and the Troy red zone numbers are dazzling. I mean, their red zone numbers are 58.97% are their opponent red zone scoring percentage. The 10th ranked team in the country, La Tech, is at 72%. They're 58%. The second ranked team is, I think, 67%. On the road, this is shocking. On the road, their red zone scoring percentage includes a game at LSU. It was 52%. It's crazy. That's, I mean, you're talking teams were scoring that includes field goals half the time. Mm-hmm. But that's a good take. I didn't even consider the under, but I like that. And the North Texas offense just isn't the same without Wilson.
Sure.
So thanks for your take there. Let's go on to the next game, which is the Auto Nation Cure Bowl, which is played in Orlando. This game is ugly. So you have Georgia State. I found some good nuggets on this game. Georgia State versus Georgia State versus Western Kentucky, and Western Kentucky's open 4.5-point favorites up to about 6.5, over under 51.5. The Georgia State ended the season poorly, which was one thing to note.
Uh-huh.
They lost their last two games, and you know they were pretty much embarrassed. But they've never won a bowl, so you have to keep that in mind. They have that motivation. Western Kentucky's won 3 straight bowls the last 3 straight years. These two teams, you know, what I really noticed when looking into both of these teams, you could argue either one of them is the worst rushing team in the country. So if you look at from a pure yards per game perspective, Western Kentucky is dead last. They average 66.9 yards per game on the ground. If you look at it from an S&P plus rushing offense, Georgia State is dead last. So you're not going to see, you know, and Georgia State did allow 200 yard rushers the last two games of the year, but they didn't the whole year before. But you're not going to see the ball on the ground this game. So you expect the ball in the air early and often. I would look at the over here. I don't know the motive. I don't know if Western Kentucky cares, but they should be able to throw on Georgia State. Key injury to watch is Penny Hart for Georgia State, who's questionable, and he's huge in their passing game. But both teams have capable quarterbacks. I see that there's going to be points. I can see the argument for Georgia State, but it's tough. What do you see?
Yeah, I'll be actually pretty quick with this one, because what's going to happen on Saturday is everybody's going to watch North Texas and Troy, and then your TV's just going to roll over into the Vegas Bowl because of the timing aspect, and I doubt anybody's actually going to watch the Cure Bowl unless you're a WKU alum or a Georgia State alum. I can't imagine this getting any time during the Vegas Bowl or during the North Texas-Troy game. So, you know, Stuck is right. The ball is going to be in the air. There's not going to be a lot of rushing going on. The passing S&P defensive ranks of these teams, let me tell you how bad they are. They're 115th and they're 127th in defending the pass. That is atrocious. Both Western Kentucky and Georgia State have senior quarterbacks playing their last games. Connor Manning for Georgia State, Mike White for Western Kentucky. Western Kentucky has a hell of a time protecting him. He had 42 sacks this year, which is, you know, they've had a very un-Western Kentucky-like year. And, you know, this is not the same team that's been around before. But, you know, they're no strangers to winning bowl games in Florida. They've won the Boca Raton Bowl down there before. They won the Miami Beach bowl game. Those are both in the past 2 years, so they know how to take a business trip down to Florida and get the job done. For me, I lined the game 8. S&P Plus lined the game at 4. You know, it's sitting right in the middle at 6.5. I don't have, you know, I got to publish something. I got to publish a side on this. But
how does this game not shatter, though?
Yeah, it's got to go over, right? I mean, it's sitting at 51.5.
I mean,
right
no
now.
Running. The clock's going to be going so slow, and these teams are going to be throwing it all day against terrible pass defenses.
Yeah, and checking out my numbers, like my actual total numbers on this game, I've got it at 59. So, I mean, a total at 51.5 seems pretty short. So, and it's actually rising. It's up to 52 in some spots. So,
I'm going to play the over as we talk.
Yep, let's suggest the over, and then I guess you're going to have to – we should publish this, I think, on Thursday. So I'll have a side picked out. But like I said, I think the number is spot on, and, you know, I know what I've already written up is I'm going to play it live. And what I'm going to try to do is get Western Kentucky at a money line. I'm going to try to get Georgia State over a touchdown. So if you're going to play a side, that's my best suggestion.
Yeah, and ultimately, like you said before, in these spreads that are 6-4 especially – stop, you know, this is really important in bowls. Don't get caught up on the 6 or 4. Do you think Western Kentucky is going to win, or do you think that they're not going to care and Georgia State trying to win their first bowl is going to, you know, come out and win? That's really how you should bet this game, and then for confidence pools as well. So moving on to the next bowl, which is the Las Vegas Bowl, which we just mentioned. It's obviously in Las Vegas, Nevada. Boise State versus Oregon -7.5, over under 59.5. Boise State's been in a bowl, I think, for 15 straight years. This line, I know you grabbed some of it with low limits. I think opened at 1. It's moved up to 7.5. Oregon's dealing with a coaching change. They named Cristobal their Coffins coordinator, the interim head coach. The status of both running backs are very important in this game. I still don't know if Royce Freeman, Oregon's all-time leading rusher, is going to play. Last I checked, he hasn't confirmed nor denied. And then Boise State's leading rusher, he's also questionable with an injury. So I don't know. I mean, it's tough to – it's if everyone plays, it is strength on strength. And that's Alexander Mattison for Boise, because Oregon has one of the best rushing offenses in the country. But Boise State has a top 20 rush defense. So it's tough. I mean, Oregon's a different animal with, I always want to say, Air Bear, Herbert back at quarterback. So what do you see here?
This is my Homer Simpson with my Boise State jersey. I'm going back into the bushes. I'm letting the bushes cover me back up. I'm going to come back out with a Ducks jersey on. So in case you didn't know, Oregon, you know, Willie Taggart left, and he took defensive coordinator Jim Leavitt with him. And offensive coordinator Mario Cristobal was promoted to interim and then quickly made the permanent head coach of Oregon. This was a big thing for the players. The players love him. He was the offensive line coach. He's got roots down in Miami. He's a little bit out of his element because he spent his entire career down in the Miami area, I think, you know, with FIU and with Miami, the Hurricanes themselves. So, but he's got the position. The players love him. They're playing their heart out for him. And, you know, Justin Herbert being back is a really big deal. This was a different Oregon team the last few games when he came back offensively. And that's why it's really hard for me to take the advanced stats of Oregon and put them up against Boise State, because there was a Braxton Burmeister game. There was just they were pulling guys off the streets of Eugene to come in and play quarterback there for a while. So some of the offensive numbers aren't as dynamic as they should be. There's a huge discrepancy in my power number versus what S&P's was, and that's the reason I was hopping on those 5-dime, you know, that thing came out, Oregon money line. I said, oh, no, I've got this thing at 8. And so you start pinging it at $250 a pop, and it, you know, it goes to 1, goes to 3, goes to 5. So the thing moved pretty quickly, and it's finally settled down at 7.5. I still like Oregon in this spot. I just think that you can't put you can't really – put a limit on a ceiling on what Justin Herbert's been able to do with them. And another reason why I still like Oregon is the latest with Royce Freeman is he practiced on Saturday and Sunday. Now his status is still unknown. He isn't, you know, releasing that, but if he's practicing with the team and he's running first team plays, I would expect that he's going to come out and say that he's going to, he traveled with the team last night. They got into Mandalay Bay. You know, so he's traveling with the team. He's practicing with the team. So I can't understand why he wouldn't play, but I would keep my eye on this just for other headlines coming out. There's both these teams are joining each other at a dinner at Outback Steakhouse in Vegas, and there's a lot of extracurricular activities going on. They're both in town and doing all these crazy things. The thing that I would look for is Oregon ranks third nationally in finishing drives, while Boise State is 106th in finishing drives allowed. So that was the big stat that had me on Oregon. I think if Royce Freeman declares that he's going to play, I think the point spread might even get a little bit more of a bump. So I'm definitely on with the Ducks on this. I'm pretty settled in on my money line. I don't plan on coming back over the top of Boise.
Fair enough. Next bowl we have here is the Gildan New Mexico Bowl, which is in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Terrible city. Not terrible if anyone's listening that's living there.
The ABQ, 260 days of sun.
And that's involving Marshall versus Colorado State, who's laying 5.5 over under 58. Some interesting nuggets that I pulled on this game. Marshall has won 5 straight bowls under Doc Holliday. And, you know, Colorado State, this was an interesting nugget that I found. Under Bobo, who's been there, this is his third year, they finished 7-5 and 5-3 in the Mountain West and lost a bowl their first 2 years. They finished 7-5 and 5-3 this year. Do we really expect a different result? I actually really like Marshall in this spot. Couple reasons why. Marshall has no rushing game at all, which one of the reasons we were on UTSA was a good secondary. They're, if you look at the S&P Plus numbers, they're 128th out of 130 teams in rushing S&P Plus, which means that in order to stop Marshall, you have to defend their passing game because they have both of their star receivers, Tyre Brady and Marcel Williams, will play this weekend. They've missed the last couple. Colorado State has a terrible pass defense. They're 111th in passing S&P Plus. And, you know, I think that they're going to move, that, you know, Marshall's going to be able to move the ball against the Colorado State defense that can't get off the field. They're 114th in third down conversion percentage allowed. I think this is a really live dog. I think Marshall gets the job done confidence-wise as well. Do you agree?
Yeah, we took him in the confidence pool, and you really got a lot of the good nuggets about this matchup. I like Marshall as well. I lined it at 4.5, and S&P Plus made it 3. So the 5.5 that's currently out there, I think that's too much. So you obviously want to hit Marshall and take the money line on them. You know, both the teams and the win loss. You know, Colorado State lost 4 of their last 5, including that horrendous non cover against Boise State, and Marshall lost 3 of their last 4. You know, but. And all the focus on this game is going to be Colorado State's 14th ranked offense against Marshall's 22nd ranked defense. And Marshall has a linebacker, Chase Hancock. He's amazing. He's had 17 run stuffs, 9 tackles for loss, 2 sacks. You know, and he's tasked with keeping an eye spying on Nick Stevens and tackling Michael Gallup. So he's definitely got a day in front of him. But you're right. The Marshall offense is going to be able to move the ball a little bit. They're at least respectable on rushing power success rate, which is 40th. You mentioned Colorado State and their third down conversion percentage. It's one of the worst in the entire nation. I like Marshall here. I don't, you know, Colorado State's 0-3 against the spread in their last 3 bowl games. That's a reflection of Bobo. That's a reflection of prep. That's a reflection of coaching. So, yeah, definitely. We're rolling Marshall here.
Glad we agree there. Next bowl is the Raycom Media Camellia Bowl in Montgomery, Alabama. I feel like every bowl's in Alabama or out in the Southwest. And in this game, Arkansas State is laying 3.5 against Middle Tennessee State. You know, thing with Arkansas State, you have one of the most prolific passing attacks in the country led by their quarterback, Justice Hansen. I think they were 6th in FBS with about over 340 yards per game. And I just don't think MTSU can slow them down, but I don't know if Arkansas State's necessarily going to have the motivation here. Both teams have terrible offensive lines, but Arkansas State does have a defensive line that's 5th in the country in adjusted sack rate, which did intrigue me. Middle Tennessee State, on the other hand, is 47th, not bad, but nowhere close to that. So I think Arkansas State might be able to generate more pressure. Middle Tennessee State's 0-4 in their last 4 bowls. Arkansas State, of course, beat Central Florida in a bowl last year. I don't really have a strong feeling here either way. Some of the things led me to believe Arkansas State has the matchup advantage, but not sure how much they care. What do you see here?
Yeah, this is another. I mentioned before that Oregon was hard to put their advanced stats up against Boise, and the reason was because of Justin Herbert coming back and him missing a big chunk of games, which affects what their advanced stats look like. Kind of the same thing here. Backup John or Zua for Middle Tennessee State took over when Brent Stockstill got injured for six games.
Yeah,
you know, Stockstill was 14 touchdowns to 5 interceptions, and that's much better than the backups. You know, so Stockstill is much more effective at finding the end zone, and the advanced stats or the passing success rate is better when Stockstill is playing. So he is playing, he is healthy, and Arkansas State's defense is 96 in defending pass explosiveness. So that's going to be a problem if Middle Tennessee State can prevent Stockstill from getting, you know, sacked and keep the pressure off of him. You know, but you're right, Arkansas State put up 606 yards against Troy. I mean, Troy's a good defense, so Arkansas State can put it up, but, you know, there's that whole motivation angle there, and you know, but I, you know, Middle Tennessee's defense has proved this year. There was terrible last year. They ranked 23rd and 39th in defensive pass and rushing explosiveness and defending passing explosiveness, respectively. So, you know, while all the attention is going to be on Arkansas State's offense, it's actually a very underrated Middle Tennessee defense that I think makes the difference here. And I'm gonna, I think I've already taken the 4. But I'm definitely on the 4, and I think it's disappearing. It's probably going to head on down to 3, so you might want to get that.
Yeah, it's a really good point on Stockstill. And one thing that I forgot to mention with Marshall is you mentioned both of their struggles, Marshall and Colorado State, to end the year. But Marshall, who, you know, we just said can't run the ball, their two receivers were hurt for a few of their games to end the season. You know, Tyre Brady was probably their best player on offense. So, you know, you have to – and Colorado State had – you know, it's not like they're getting anyone back, but it's a great point with Stockstill quarterback, which is certainly a huge upgrade. Don't think I'll be involved in that game, but can't disagree with your take. Next bowl we have here is the, oh my gosh, the Cherry Birdie.
Say it.
The Cherry Birdie. The Cherry Birdie Tart Cherry Boca Raton Bowl.
The Cherry Cherry Bundy.
Cherry Bundy. Cherry Bundy. I'm looking at my terrible handwriting. Cherry Bundy Tart Cherry Boca Raton Bowl, which is obviously in Boca Raton. Which is where Florida Atlantic plays. So we mentioned this before. What is that, by the way? Cherubundi Tart?
It's not sold up there in Philly. It's not sold down here in Arkansas or Oklahoma. It's not sold in Texas. I don't know. It's like a – I think it's like a Coke. I think it's a
– It is. It's, I just Googled it. It's like a cherry juice drink.
Yeah.
$78? Yeah. This is like a – No, this is like a case of 6, 32 ounces. $77. This must be like – That seems expensive. Yeah, 132 ounces, like $7. What is this stuff? I got to get some of this. I'm going to try it. It's tart cherry juice. Okay. They're apparently sponsoring the bowl. We got to sponsor a bowl eventually. I mean,
it can't be that. If these guys can afford to sponsor one, obviously you and I could pool some money and sponsor a bowl.
If they're look, it's got really high ratings, too. I mean, if they're charging $6 per 32 ounces, I mean, they have a lot of cash left over. But there should be like a sports action degenerate bowl. That's what needs to happen.
Well, the Bitcoin bowl is gone now, so, you know.
Yeah, there's one bowl that we didn't even cover that's on Saturday. It's like the Celebration Bowl. It's not even with FBS teams. Mm-hmm. Although it's two teams that have won like a 9 in a row, NCAA and Grambling, I think. I don't know.
Spread's 9. I don't care either.
So anyway, in this game, in the Cherubundi Tart Cherry Boca Raton Bowl, FAU is playing at home. They're laying 22.5 versus Akron. FAU is only one of 5 teams in the country averaging over 6 yards per rush attempt. They're facing an Akron rush defense that's horrendous, allowing over 5 yards per rush to 105th in the country. And the whole question is, you know, FAU is obviously going to have the home crowd. You mentioned this before. Do they care? Does it even matter? They've been rolling everybody. Do they just name the score here again?
Yeah. How bad is the MAC East? I mean, I dive into Akron's numbers, and it's not just against Florida Atlantic that they look bad. They just look bad in general. They're really bad. So I'm not going to get into, like, you know, because Akron's outside the top 100 and everything. Just realize that Akron's team speed on defense is horrendous. And when Florida Atlantic snaps the ball, they're already ahead. They're already ahead. It doesn't matter if they, you know, they roll out of bed and they're not ready for this game, even though, you know, it is at 7 o'clock at night. Akron cannot keep up. Now, there is a little bit of motivation to play. We both kind of like the Cato Nelson kid at quarterback. He was actually playing in the Florida Class 5A High School State Championship at Pembroke Pines, like 30 miles down the street. So he's going to be highly motivated to come in there and kind of show off for family and friends because this is his territory. But there's only so much that this kid can do against this Florida Atlantic team. And he's the backup quarterback, you know, and he wasn't, you know, that successful playing for them in the first place. You know, Florida Atlantic's offense is first in the nation in finishing drives, 15th in efficiency, 23rd in explosiveness. There's, I just can't see Lane Kiffin letting up. I think some of these videos, I've seen videos on Twitter of Lane and some of the players. They're not excited at all about playing this game in FAU Stadium. They're not excited. They're not happy that FIU got to go up to St. Pete. They're not happy that some of the other teams in their conference are getting to travel to nice destinations. I don't think the players were especially happy with some of the swag that's coming in with the Cherry Bundy tart package that they're going to get. I don't know if that means that they're going to have a bad performance against a really bad team. In no way should you play Akron. So let's get down to, you know, the brass tacks here. Should you play Akron right now? No, I wouldn't take it at 22.5. I don't know if I'd take it at 24. I mean, even though I've got it rated at 20 and S&P Plus has got it at 19.5, do you want to be on the other side of Lane Kiffin if he's pissed off or indifferent or just wants to prove a point, or he's on a primetime game by himself on December 19th and just wants to show off? There's no way in the world you should be on Akron. If you want to be on them, play it live, because I'm sure 28 will pop up pretty fast. Other than that, I'm taking FAU, and if there's a team total on their over specifically, I would probably hop on that as well.
I believe, and don't quote me on what you can quote me on this, this is the largest bowl spread ever.
I hear that twice. I don't know if that's been proven, though.
I'll look into it, but I think it is. I don't remember one being larger.
Let me throw something else down about the Owls. 8-2 is a favorite this year against the spread, and they're covering the margin. They're covering the spread by an additional 14.8 points. So 22 may not be enough. 36 may not be enough.
Yep. All right, yeah, I mean, I think it's FAU or nothing. I don't know if I want to lay the 22.5, but all valid points. They should be able to just run the ball, just hand it off, and get 5-6 yards every play. And they'll have explosive running plays as well. But they could be up 28 and you get an Akron backdoor. I don't know. So the last bowl that we'll go over is a new bowl, the DXL Frisco Bowl.
The Frisco Bowl, I think it was around. It's just sponsored by somebody else.
Yeah.
Maybe Nolan Ryan. I don't know.
And that's in Frisco, Texas. Speaking of teams that aren't happy with where they're playing, and speaking of Arkansas football, this is the only time you'll ever hear Arkansas football in the bowls. Yeah, SMU's head coach, Chad Morris, left for Arkansas. So their new head coach, Sonny Dykes, will coach this game, I believe. This is close. I think 30 miles from SMU's campus. They were actually disappointed in that they were, not shipped off somewhere. It's their first bowl since 2012. They're 7-7-1 in program history in bowls. They tied in the Cotton Bowl in 1948 against Penn State. Imagine a major bowl just ends in a tie these days. College football is so different. You have co-national championships, ties. That's the main question with SMU is you have a new – because there's a lot of questions. They're not that happy with being close to home. They have this coaching change going on. Their best corner, they have one of the worst defenses in the country. They allow 6.7 yards per play. It's 123rd in the country, which is worst among all bowl teams. And Jordan Wyatt, who's probably their best playmaker on defense, just had surgery. He's out. Their defense is terrible. Their offense is really good. They should be able to throw the ball on anybody, really. I think that you're going to tell me that Blatek has some stats that will, that can slow them down a little bit. I don't think you can lay 5 with SMU and their defense. And La Tech has won 3 straight bowls the last 3 years. So they have some pedigree here. I don't know. I lean La Tech here, but I could see the argument for both sides. What do you see?
Yeah, so let me start back with the coaching cap, because this thing happened really fast in the last couple of days. So, yeah, Chad Morris has gone over to Arkansas. That's a podcast for you and I to talk about in April for spring practices. What happened was is the offensive coordinator got left behind. His name was Jeff Traylor, and he was going to run the smash mouth spread that Chad Morris left in place, and the players were happy with that. There was an outcry to keep Jeff Traylor around. There was a little bit of promotion within the boosters to keep Jeff Traylor on and make him the coach of this team. And then Missouri came calling last night for Jeff Traylor for him to come be the offensive coordinator in absence of Josh Heupel, who has moved on from Missouri. So once Missouri took interest in SMU's offensive coordinator, Jeff Traylor, that's when Chad Morris pulled the trigger and said, nope, you're coming up to Arkansas and you're going to be our offensive coordinator. You're going to take the same position with me up at Arkansas. And that left SMU going to a bowl with no coach whatsoever. Now, the Sonny Dykes thing is interesting. He's, you know, Texas high school. He's from the state of Texas. He spent most of his career, large chunk in Texas. He came up through the Texas high school ranks. He was Mike Leach's offensive coordinator at Texas Tech. He tried to run the air raid out of Cal. Didn't work out so well. So now he's in at SMU. He's weepy. He's emotional. And he's very happy to be coaching at an old school Southwest Conference SMU, where he has fond memories of Eric Dickerson and all that good stuff. So now that we've gone through that entire, you know, laundry list of what's happened with the coaching staff at SMU, could you imagine being a player where you get named to a bowl that you don't want to go to because you don't get to travel, where your coach ends up leaving, a coach you love ends up leaving, and then the offensive coordinator that you've been lobbying as a player to be the coach, now he's gone, and you got some other guy coming in. He's trying to install he's been an analyst at TCU this year. He's going to come in and try to install a different offensive playbook in 8 days to get prepared for Louisiana Tech. Count me out. I didn't even have to look into Louisiana Tech's, you know, advanced stats. I didn't want anything to do with SMU on this side. So let's throw a couple nuggets in there on La Tech. La Tech, this is the third bowl in the last 4 years where they've come to the Dallas metro area. This is a huge recruiting footprint for them, and they take this, you know, they take this travel pretty seriously coming into the Dallas area. You know, the question is can they contain the two wide receivers that go for over 1,000 yards? That's Trey Quinn and Cortland Sutton for SMU. You know, and the way that they could do that is the Bulldogs are very good at eating clock and putting points up on the ground putting points up on the board with a ground attack that ranks 13th in rushing success rate. You know, as for the Bulldogs defense, they're actually 24th in limiting explosiveness. That's a big deal. I mean, because that's SMU's whole MO is explosiveness through the air, and specifically through the air, defending explosiveness, La Tech is 35th in the nation, which is a lot better than I expected, because a lot of their other defensive metrics really aren't that good. But when it comes to limiting explosiveness on passing downs, they're 35th. And that's good enough for me to back them up. I'm definitely taking them at 5. I think this is going to go down a little bit. I can't make a case for even taking SMU straight up. I think La Tech wins this thing outright.
Yeah, I think you're going to end up convincing me on that. Too many things are working in their favor. And I think you told me earlier in the week they're 43rd in defending explosiveness on the pass game. So at least they can prevent some of the more explosive plays. So that is a pretty comprehensive rundown of the first 7 bowl games. So hopefully it can help y'all win some money for the first week of bowls. And like I said, we'll be back next week to cover off, you know, the next late games that are later next week, weekend, and then early the week thereafter. Also follow us on Twitter, the Sports Action app, for any plays and thoughts. And we appreciate y'all listening, and we'll catch y'all later. Cheers.
Peace out. Everybody got their cups, but they ain't chipped in. Now this time-